The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Just kidding. It's just the banking system. And if you can't beat them, join them. At least that's what ChatGPT AI said. And your Amazon Ring has been hacked by aliens, and they're demanding universal access to Prime shipping. Those stories and more on today's episode of the MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by MSP GeekCon 2023, a conference for MSPs by MSPs. Occurring May 21st through the 23rd, 2023 in Orlando, Florida, this two-day event is built around the journey of technical growth from Tier 1 to Tier 3. Visit mspgeekcon.com for more information.
Good morning and welcome to the March 17th edition of MSP Dispatch. We are your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. And if you don't believe me, just read the banner at the bottom of the screen. It's right there. How you doing today, Tony?
Good, brother. How are you doing? Matt.
Matt. My name's Matt. That's right. Thank you. I'm Matt, and I'm standing in for our fearless leader, Ray Orsini, and I'm here with the one and only Tony Francisco. Now, Tony, I'm standing in today for Ray because he just got back from CCF, the CompTIA event. I heard was fantastic. I know you were there. We've got some great footage of you and Rob Ray and tons of other people that we're putting out there for everyone to see. And it looked like it was a fantastic time. You enjoy yourself?
Oh, it was so good actually getting to see the people that not only that we've worked with for, in some cases, well over a decade, but hearing the war stories and watching not just the evolution of the kind of the resolution and the things that the solutions that they've applied, but seeing, frankly, some businesses being sold, some businesses buying other businesses, and watching all of the individuals that we've known for so long pass their knowledge down to other new members in the industry. It was great to watch.
It's always nice to see when there's some form of a generational transfer of knowledge that takes place. And given that it's St. Patrick's Day, I'm going to give you a little story that I think is similar. It's something that I've learned in my family. Of course, my father's Irish. I'm half Irish. And as I've learned more about my dad's side of my family, interesting things have come up. So last name is Fox. It's from Northern Ireland. And we have a coat of arms. And that coat of arms has a couple of different things on it. And that includes a tiger. I'm sorry. No, it's a lion. Ooh, a tiger. I mean, I don't want to upset anyone. It's a lion. And if you see those two hands on there, those are called the Hand of Ulster. And there's a really interesting story behind it that I would tell you today, instead of like us doing the normal St. Patrick's Day fun facts. Now, the story behind the Hand of Ulster is one of myth, and I'm sure there's some level of truth to it someplace, but it goes a little something like this. There's a province in Northern Ireland called Ulster, and there was a chieftain. And he was having a bit of a, I don't know if you'd say issue or feud with another chieftain that wanted a plot of land that was near their provinces. And they agreed that they would have a race. They're going to race across a body of water, and whoever made it to land first would win the land. Plain and simple. It's a very straightforward agreement. You get there first, you win. I get there first, I win. Well, let's just say I'm the chieftain from Ulster, and I'm not winning this race. I am behind. I know I'm going to lose. What do? Cut my hand off, throw it on land. Loophole. I just won.
That is so awesome. That is commitment. That is commitment. But did it have to be the hand? Could it have been something? I'm just trying to figure this out. I mean, could it have been a finger? I want you to process this. If your on your flag was that, wouldn't it have been that much better if it was just? It would have,
but then you got a question. I mean, then it becomes a physics problem, right? The weight of whatever it is you're throwing, the distance you're trying to throw it. I guess you could fling a hand much further. But at the end of the day, I honestly hope it's myth, because that seems like a very a short-term gain for a very long time loss.
I'm saying it's commitment. It's a genetic. Hey, listen.
Hey, genetic. I'm very committed to the show. I'm committed to the MSP channel, and I'm committed to us giving the news.
You know what we should do? Let's get into the news.
Let's do it. First on our list today, 6 reasons Silicon Valley Bank failed and what business leaders should do about it. Written by Peter Cohen for Inc.com. Silicon Valley Bank was the second largest bank failure in history and the biggest U.S. lender to fail since the 2008 global financial crisis when it collapsed on March 10th due to massive outflow of deposits. The FDIC took over SVB because it could not find a buyer in time, and the main reason was this rapid outflow of deposits from its customers, which were mostly unprofitable startups and venture capital firms. Now, customers withdrew their money from SVB after they announced a $1.8 billion, with a B, loss on its treasury security portfolio and borrowed $15 billion to cover its liquidity needs. SVB had very high levels of uninsured deposits not covered by the FDIC, and that makes it vulnerable to a run on the bank. Now, in the wake of SVB's failure, business leaders really need to evaluate the banks that they're using for similar risks. They should check the bank's level of uninsured deposits and evaluate the risk in the bank's investment and loan portfolios to ensure they're not at risk of a bank failure. By doing so, you can protect your money from being lost in a similar way. Now, Tony, I'm not the biggest when it comes to finance within this respect. I've always been a very technical, hands-on person. I love delving into technology and leaving the finances to other people and businesses. So aside from the amazing level of anxiety that I've seen friends of mine in financial positions within MSPs, vendors, and other places experience over the past week, can you maybe enlighten me on exactly what has happened here?
Without going too far in depth, and I am by far, maybe one step further than a 5-year-old talking to the professors out there.
I'm a 3.5-year-old learning how to walk right now. So we're good.
I am under the impression that almost every bank, the money that they take in, they can loan out. And it originally started off with a 2-to-1 ratio. So they can, if they have $100, they could give loans for up to $200 based on that revenue, which is fascinating because then there's predictable results on the amount that will be returned and will not be returned. So assuming half the people with the associated credit check will return the cash, then they know that they're going to be able to pay back the other person that can pay that needs it. That 1-to-2 ratio went to, or 2-to-1 went to 6-to-1 and eventually 8-to-1. And it went past that. And when I say past that, substantially past that. Yeah. Like I think it was like 20 at some point, then they reduced it. The point of the story is that banks are now leveraging money that's deposited, the money that you and I put in the bank is now leveraged in other, we'll call them investments, bets. And as weird as that sounds, it's the way banks make money and they can provide other services. And the question is, what are those services? And we can get into a whole conversation, the rabbit hole doesn't end. But at the end of the day, one of the bets that Silicon Valley Bank made, which was what I consider to be a good bet, were bonds. Government bonds, what a great way to put your money in as opposed to some startup.
Just really quickly, what 13-year-old hasn't been given a bond by a parent or a family member at one time? I think that's something that's put in our minds from a very early age.
I wish it was. It was something that I was fascinated by when I started learning the value of bonds, and I did mine a little bit less traditional. But this is why I know so much about bonds in this particular case, because the return on the bond through the length of that agreement is substantial. The problem is midway through that purchase process, the bank started raising the interest rates. And because they were raising the interest rates, the money that they were loaning out was far more expensive. And two things were happening. Less people were taking the money out and more people were requiring money that they invested in. Well, that money was invested in these bonds, which they couldn't cash out until the term was completed. And when the term was completed, they can get this nice investment back, but it didn't make a difference. They needed the money now. That is literally by definition the concept of a run on the banks, where people were saying, I need the money now. Where's my money? Oh, wait, you're getting your money? I want to get my money. What do you mean you can't get your money? Therein lies the issue. How do they get, they pull short on these bonds, which is why they were saying, we have these assets, these bonds, we need to start borrowing large volumes of money to fulfill our customers' needs. That is a very unfortunate reality of our banking system. And with the absence of Glass-Steagall that was repealed in the last administration, we are going to have a framework that is going to be very brittle and akin to the 2007-2008 memories that we all have. And I'm really interested. I could go on and on about this, but I've been looking about this. We have another 20 banks that have actually been closed this week. 20, mm-hmm, by the mm-hmm. way.
Regional banks.
We have regional banks. We have, I believe, another 20 scheduled by the end of the month, regional banks that are, and so the FDIC is going to jump in at some point. And I'm really interested to see what the peripheral impact is. I can go on and on and on.
I'm going to end this in saying I have a queen size mattress and I think I'm going to upgrade to a king so I can hide more money underneath it. I got to tell you, I thank you for sharing your insight and your intelligence with us. And now I'm going to ask you to share a little artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence? Well, who would do that? Oh yeah, Google. From InfoWorld.com, got a story here that talks about Google announcing today that it will release previews of three new AI features, including AI composition for Google Workspace, developer prototyping and coding via Palm and Maker Suite, and validated models for its Vertex AI service. With the Workspace features, they're focused on Docs and Gmail, users can use Google's AI to rewrite emails in a particular style or tone and even generate documents. Simply asking the system to, quote, generate a sales pitch or similar will create a simple document that users can then edit to meet their needs. The AI can also help redraft documents to fit a more formal tone or shorten them for brevity. So, Matt, this is where I'm asking you. Listen, I'm speaking on behalf of Google. I'm stressing. ChatGPT, what do I do to address this? Put AI in your Google applications, Gmail. Okay, hey guys, we need to put AI in our stuff. Is that kind of what happened? I just feel like obviously I'm simplifying it and I'm overacting this whole scenario, but what am I seeing here? Are you seeing the same thing?
I'm seeing Skynet getting a portable installation. It doesn't need a registry. What I'm seeing here are more and more interesting ways that help us get through the day, that help us button up the work that we've already done. One of the concerns I've had with AI for many years now, well before the boom that we've experienced, is that AI poses a risk of eliminating some of the critical thinking that's so important to us as humans. It makes it too easy to just ask a machine to do something for us. But when I hear a story like this, I hear of an AI that's able to give us a template or provide us with a framework to help us with our ideas and to help us avoid things like a blank page problem. And I appreciate that very much. Don't do the work for me. Just help me do it in a way that's a little bit better. Help me find new ways to present my information that's more impactful. And that's what I get from a story like that. It's not the, hey, we're going to do every single thing for you. Give me a question. I'll give you a 30-page answer. Go hand it to your professor for your class. That's a bit much. That gets me a little nervous at times. But this is something I like.
I am fascinated with the kinetic energy that's behind AI and the realization. Now, AI, there's analytics, and then there's the execution of thoughts around said analytics, so the in event, essentially. But the AI that's resulting today with GPT 4.0, if you haven't seen it, it is fascinating. We're talking image recognition. My prediction, sound and video recognition and analytics from that, which will, in the combination of execution and a repository for customized communication, we are going to have full-blown sales and service support centers implemented strictly from AI. Let me throw this out to you. This is for the MSP community. We've got ChatGPT, okay, which is just GPT, but in chat format. Mm-hmm. It cannot execute anything. And we all know that, but it can, hey, can you please provide me X? Which, by the way, I said, hey, can you please provide me a Chrome plugin that simplifies a web page and puts a green dot or a red dot on the top when this is simplified in less than 150 words, unless we have statistical information. I'm not joking. And it just summarizes a web page just like that, the entire web page. It's fascinating. And I did that and it's free and it's quick. And it even tells you the steps on how to implement that Chrome plugin, by the way. Mm. Can you do X? And X is if read the customer notes and in CRM greater than sign, customer greater than sign, note tab, and reply to them with a follow-up, kind follow-up response, and parse their response and put it in the next note section and CC me on a summary that comes to me every hour from all the responses in a singular email. Then you tie that into your CRM, but you're also tying that the response to be executed from a Zapier, which pulls the information and then sends through CRM, which is then feeding back through this triangle. You have, for all intents and purposes, an entire sales force right there, a customer service center, a fulfillment center, an account manager or customer enablement center right there from those actions. People haven't tied the context and communication to the executable, to the customized database of users.
Intelligent automation is where you're going.
When you tie those three things together, I can promise you the workforces of today are going to be substantially altered. No one's figured out how to connect those yet. And by that, mm-hmm. I mean, no one's really tried. But with GPT 4.0, this is going to open up an entirely new level. And I'm interested to see, I mean, Google, congratulations on Google on having this new plugin to their workforce, but GPT will, for the most part, almost replace that in entirety.
There's no question about it. Now, one thing I will say is that I feel with the proliferation of news with AI lately, it's almost getting to be a one-to-one ratio between AI and security stories. And we just covered AI, so you know what we're going to cover next, right?
But the last thing we want to talk about is if you were hacked. I mean, we don't want to talk about that, or do you?
But do we? I kind of feel like it today. Let's do that. So, has Amazon's Ring been hacked? Ransomware gang posts threat to leak data, written by Davey Winder for Forbes. Now, the ransom group Alpha claims to have breached Ring, the Amazon-owned doorbell and security camera company, and has threatened to publish Ring's data. The group is known to operate as a ransomware as a service operation and is behind several Black Cat ransomware attacks. VX Underground, a large online collection of malware source code, has confirmed that the claim was published by Alpha. And right now, it's not known what data, if any, has been breached by Alpha, and there's no advice right now for Ring users on what to do at this time. Now, Ring devices, the doorbells with the cameras built in, support end-to-end encryption in most countries. And that means even if the footage is uploaded, Amazon, law enforcement, and ransomware groups can't really access that information. But, you know, if the ransomware attack is confirmed, it's very possible that it means that other types of data, corporate or customer data, could be what has been exfiltrated. And that's where things get a little bit worrisome. Now, a Ring spokesperson has stated that there's currently no indication that Ring has experienced a ransomware event. But on March 15th, Amazon Ring did confirm a third-party vendor may have experienced a ransomware event. So there's more to be looked into, and that's what they're doing right now. The vendor reportedly has no access to Ring customer records. So again, that kind of leads to potentially being corporate, which has been exfiltrated, if at all. The story is still developing, and the right security teams are engaged to determine whether Alpha has perpetrated a successful Black Hat ransomware deployment. So now, Tony, what are your thoughts on Ring? I have had installations for family members. I know plenty of people that have them. I did not install one for myself, and now I'm questioning whether or not I really would want one.
I have, what is that called? Insane paranoia. Mm-hmm. So I have multiple subnets and VLANs. One is very specific for here's our computers. One is very specific to here's your IoT devices. That includes the thermostats, fire detectors, the little lawn, you know, the watering system, IoT devices. One includes, and these are all separate, by the way, one includes the surveillance system around the house. And there's very specific rules. One includes another one for a guest environment. So for guests coming over. And the surveillance system can only talk to one device. It can't go out unless you authenticate against that device. There's no traffic allowed out. And maybe some people would consider that to be paranoid, but it's specific to these things that you're talking about now, Matt. And
I think I didn't mean to interrupt, but paranoia, no. Privacy, the right to privacy, absolutely.
Well, everyone says, oh, you're lucky that you did that. I live hard by the theme, luck favors the prepared. And I'm fairly lucky. I'm not lucky. I've been prepared across the board for this, because we literally talk about it on the MSP Dispatch all the time about, oh, this vendor was hacked on the back end. Was it the vendor's fault? And you can go back and forth. It doesn't matter. The vendor, you are under the assumption that you're purchasing something because they can do it better than you. Otherwise, you would have a generator in your backyard generating electricity. No, you plug into the system. You would have all of your cash under your new mattress so that you're going to purchase and not in the banking system. You would have you'd have cows in the backyard because you don't want to go buy your milk. Someone else is going to do this. There could be an issue at any one of these outsourced locations, and it's best to be as prepared as possible in the event something does go awry. But I'm not a fan of Ring from the aspect of a security or surveillance or a listening device that includes the dots, that includes Apple devices. None of that is allowed in the house. I don't know. Maybe again, paranoia.
I agree with you 100%. And I'm going to end this segment by sharing something that a man, Gary Giscombe, one of my old bosses, one of my favorite bosses, a former IBM executive, told me on my first day of work with him. Prepare for the worst, hope for the best. I think we got to get into some notables.
Notables?
Notables.
We can do that. Jumping in to my first notable from Fortinet, straight from bleepingcomputer.com. An unknown attacker used zero-day exploits to abuse the new Fortinet bug patch this month in attacks targeting government and large organizations that have led to OS and file corruption and data loss. Fortinet issued a release update on March 7th to address this high-severity security vulnerability, which is CVE-2022-41328. That allowed threat actors to execute unauthorized code or commands. The list of affected products includes FortiOS version 6.4.0 through 6.4.11, FortiOS version 7.0.0 through 7.0.9, FortiOS version 7.2.0 through 7.2.3, and all versions of FortiOS 6.0 and 6.2. To patch the security flaw, admins have to upgrade vulnerable products to FortiOS version 6.4.12 and later, FortiOS version 7.0.10 and later, or FortiOS 7.2.4 and above. In my next notable mention, straight from Engadget.com, the UK bans TikTok from government devices with immediate effect. The UK has become the latest major jurisdiction to ban TikTok from government devices. The measure is in place with an immediate effect following a security reviewed order by ministers. The move is part of a broader restriction on third-party apps and government devices. Leaders in many countries and other territories have expressed concerns that China may gain access to their residents' or officials' data through TikTok. ByteDance, which owns TikTok, is headquartered in Beijing. Many legislators have banned TikTok from government-owned devices in recent months, including, in the U.S., dozens of states, Canada, and the European Commission. The government noted that people should be aware of each app's data policies. It said TikTok requires users to give permission for the app to access certain information stored on the phone or tablet, such as geolocation data and contacts. Officials say they are worried about how this data may be used. Be safe, everyone.
In my first notable, Microsoft March 2023 Patch Tuesday fixes 20 days and 83 flaws written by Lawrence Abrams for Bleeping Computer. Microsoft's March 2023 Patch Tuesday includes security updates for a total of 83 vulnerabilities, including 20 days actively exploited in attacks. 9 of the vulnerabilities have been classified as critical for allowing remote code execution, denial of service, or elevation of privilege attacks. The 20 days fixed in the updates are Microsoft Outlook elevation of privilege privilege vulnerability and a Microsoft Windows smart screen security feature bypass vulnerability. Lots of words. None of them are good. The Outlook vulnerability allowed attackers to force a victim's device to connect to a remote URL and transmit the Windows account's NTLM V2 hash, which was exploited by a state-sponsored Russian hacking group known as Strontium. The smart screen vulnerability allowed hackers to create executables that bypassed the Windows mark of web security warning and was exploited by the Magnifier ransomware operation. Other vendors who released security updates in March 2023 include Apple, Cisco, Google, Fortinet, SAP, and Veeam. In my next notable, Outlook for Android and iOS get their own multi-factor authentication capability this month, written by Shannon Bennett for mspoweruser.com. Microsoft will introduce an Authenticator Lite feature in Outlook for Android and iOS to facilitate MFA for work or school accounts. This feature will be available for Microsoft 365 app, Azure Active Directory, and Outlook. The company already offers Microsoft Authenticator for Android and iOS users, but the Authenticator Lite feature will make Outlook a more comprehensive app with its own MFA capability. Microsoft aims to promote the use of MFA in its products starting with Outlook, which is a good place to start. The move's in response to criticism from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency over low MFA usage rate among Microsoft's enterprise customers.
Happy Friday, y'all. Phil Buck here for another installment of AI Roundup. This week, we're talking upgrades with two Ds for a double dose of that machine learning. First up, OpenAI's GPT model just got even smarter with the announcement of GPT-4. The company claims the model is more creative and collaborative than ever before and can solve more difficult problems with greater accuracy. Even more exciting, the model is now multimodal, meaning it can parse both text and image input. In a developer live stream earlier this week, Greg Brockman, president and co-founder of OpenAI, showed off some of the impressive new feats possible with GPT-4, including generating a website from a handwritten mockup. I think I've got at least a few of those I need to try out. Next up, Midjourney's popular AI art generator is testing its V5 update, which promises a much wider range of styles and more detailed images. The trade-off? It might be harder to use, so make sure to write longer and more explicit prompts. New features of MJ V5 include much wider stylistic range and more responsive prompting, much higher image quality and 2x the image resolution, more detailed images, and details are more likely to be correct with less unwanted text, improved performance with image prompting, and it supports tiling, aspect ratios greater than 2:1, and weighing image prompts versus text prompts. And we can't gloss over hands. The hands are looking great for once. Are you using GPT-4 or Midjourney version 5? If so, jump into the MMN Discord and tell us about your experience. And be sure to check out the latest episode of AI Roundup, where we're talking about generating images from brainwaves and corn dogs. That's right, corn dogs. That's all for today's AI Roundup. Let's check out some community events. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. March 20th through the 21st, an in-person event, MES Exchange Security in Indianapolis, Indiana. On March 22nd through the 23rd, another in-person event, ASCII MSP Success Summit in Buckhead, Georgia. And on March 24th at 12 p.m. Eastern, Channel Engage, incorporating OpenAI into managed services, opportunities and challenges. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, in case you missed it, the Tech Bar Podcast Episode 54 with Emilio Garcia of Tier 2 Technologies. On March 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Partner First, Connecting the Dots, a holistic approach to resolving network and SaaS issues. And of course, every Tuesday and Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, MSP Dispatch, presented by the MSP Media Network.
Hey, I'm Powerhouse Ray.
And I'm Super Cousin Danny.
And we're the hosts of
The Tech Bar.
Pull up a stool with us every other Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern for drinks, jokes, and games with your friends in the MSP channel.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, please hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't like it, go ahead and hit 5 times. If you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on your YouTube or favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we also have a Discord where we post our stories all week long? You can propose your own stories and even vote for which ones will be on the next show. As my friend Simon and Phil say, we did amazing today. Ray's saying the same thing in the background. I can feel it. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP TV.
At MSP Media TV, which is fine. Yeah. We're going to do this in one take because we're professionals. And if you don't want to see us at MSP Media TV, you could always reach us at 833-MSP-MEDIA.
That was simultaneously a close and a blooper at the same time. This is how this show runs, people. It doesn't stop. The train doesn't stop.
Just in time compiling the show. That's what happens. We jit the whole thing.
Matt, today went amazing. I learned that you have clearly a family lineage of insane, psychotic, dedicated, the bloodline is incredible, but it also makes me understand why you are so devoted to the show, and I love that.
There's a certain intensity that I like to apply to everything that I do. Maybe we'll get to the Panamanian side of the family another day, and I'll have a great story for you then. But until then, I hope everyone has a great day. See you, folks. Excellent.
See y'all. Be safe.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
Afterwards,
I'm Tony. I'm Tony.
Oh, Tony.
Yeah, I love it. Everybody, give it up.
You guys are crazy. You guys have lost your shit.
Gotta get you hyped up for the show.
Mama,
sorry, I didn't do that for Matt either. My bad. It's Matthew Fox. What?
Whoa!
Simply asking the system to quote generate a sales pitch or similar. Oh, I gotta redo that one. Sorry, guys. This list of affected products includes four. The list of affected products include Fort 40. One more time. 40 OS. 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 Okay, ready. Next one.
I was on mute. No one caught it. Ha 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 ha.
I actually did, but I was on mute.
Shut up, Simon.
All right. Get to notable number one, Microsoft.
Really quick, I just want to clear the throat because I've been sitting here for a minute. Could you imagine if gangsters from the 1930s or 1920s were doing these? Like, yeah, Microsoft patch 2023, pork chops and applesauce. It would just be the best thing in the world. Anyway, now that I've said that, let's get started. And was exploited by the Magnavir ransomware operation. Other vendors who that was almost all in one take. That was beautiful. In my second update, I'm just pork chops and applesauce today. In my next notable, Outlook for Android and iOS get their own multi-factor authentication. In my next notable, Outlook for Android and iOS get its. Okay. The company already offers the Microsoft Authenticator for Android and OS. Wow. Give me 1 second. The mailman's just about to drop off a package. That sounded like innuendo. Sorry.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't like it, hit it 5 times, maybe 9 times, an uneven number. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcaster. Hold on, let me one more time. Okay.
Pod snatcher?
Yes, and more of my not alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Is it me or is Phil laughing so hard he had to stand up?
Okay, ready?